right, welcome everybody to the third episode of Dank Dungeons and Drunken Dragons. Huzzah!
Huzzah! Huzzah! Huzzah! Huzzah! Huzzah!
These are bomba peppers, yes? Bombas. Delicious, yes? Fiery to the mouth, hard to digest, but very useful in the desert. He offers no resistance. His blood squirts out of his neck.
Why?
He gurgles. And his eyes roll back and he's dead as a doornail.
Okay, let's do it.
The habanero.
Fuck it.
Ay, Dios mío, she's so spicy.
Fuck it.
You gonna do it?
Fuck it.
This is a man with balls right here.
Fuck it.
Here you go.
Oh, thank you.
My minion suffers.
Just give me a second.
I hope that his resolve will hold until the combat is over. I love this shit.
Fuck it.
All right. Reroll it.
15 plus.
Boom!
Plus 7.
That hits. You get through my AC. Give me your damage, baby, with the flaming axe.
Welcome to Deep Fat Fried, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, wait. Deep Fat Fried? I'm on the wrong show. See you guys later.
Oh, okay.
Bye, guy.
Sorry.
I
want to say your name is Kevin or something.
All the time. People just show up here. They think they're on the wrong show.
Terrence?
My name is Terrence.
So he's Kevin. Kevin?
Bill?
Kevin and Terrence?
Yes.
Billy?
Right, okay.
I'm Kevin.
I'm just trying to
I'm Kevin, he's Terrence.
I'm trying to sort this shit out, you know? I mean, I'm not good with names. I barely know you guys.
Come on, Joshua.
I'm not Joshua.
Get
I go
your
by
shit together.
I go Liam. By Josh, dude.
Oh, Josh.
Not
yeah, but
Liam.
Josh is short.
Liam
for
is
Joshua.
My fucking middle name, idiot. Yeah, but I'm not named Joshua. My parents are retards, so they just named me Josh.
Wow.
There's
that must
no Yua, bitch.
That must suck.
It does suck.
Change your name to Yua. Liberate yourself.
I should, man.
I'm Yua.
Sounds like a Treyu, you know? Like, I am Yua. I ride with the purple buffalo or whatever the fuck.
I don't mean to interrupt
this chit chat here, but I'm just going to take a sip of my drink.
Take a sip of your drink out of your best host's cup.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's refreshing.
I'm coming.
Sorry, I just couldn't find a cup.
I'm coming for you, Paul. You lit a fire under my ass.
I just couldn't find a cup, TJ. I'm sorry.
I'm going to do everything possible during this upcoming season to make sure you don't win best host.
You know
host
what I'm sipping
again.
On here? TJ tears.
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
Look, let me tell you, like, you can go after it, but I'm not even concerned, dude. You want to know why?
Why's that?
Because I'm an authoritarian, dude. I don't care about what the people vote for anyways.
That's true.
I mean,
technically, Paul's an authoritarian as well. Actually, yeah. I think Paul is more of an authoritarian than you.
The irony, dude.
But I'm like a fascist authoritarian. I like that cult of personality to be focused on me while I dictate what everybody does with their lives.
Well, sure. I mean, fair enough. Dude, I thought it was funny. I looked at Paul. I'm like, look, I'm fine with being beaten by Paul and Glenn. Yeah. Honestly, I just want to beat TJ. That's like the level I'm going for, just because it'll humiliate him.
No, man, you ain't beating nothing. And who's TJ? My name is Josh.
Yeah, Joshua.
No, you're Uwa.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You're liberating yourself,
liberated.
Remember?
Yes, of course.
I'm going to beat Uwa.
So anyway, today's episode was originally going to be about like junk food and candy, but candy ended up being such an exhaustive topic and also more of a minefield of misinformation than any other subject.
Huh.
Because I would find different sites, and there's actually candy historians and shit in this country because we're that sad. But I mean, I don't know. I guess someone's got to keep track of it.
Yeah.
Sure. But they don't seem to agree on a whole hell of a lot. Like, you'll find one fact somewhere and another fact somewhere else. So I'm not 100% sure that everything I'm telling you is true, but everything is from a legitimate, incredible source. So
I mean, look, we're a show where we, a bunch of stoner laymen, try and learn about a subject that we know absolutely nothing about. So we can only do what we can do.
Right.
You've done your best to make sure that the stuff that you're going to tell us today is factual and
accurate. I just want to make sure that people understand that there's a lot of conflicting information about this, and sometimes I just had to go with my gut about
which
sounded...
Who would have thought there would be controversy over candy?
You never know. So I don't know. It's kind of a caveat to this episode.
I didn't think I'd be talking about the Civil War and shit either, but...
That you, you will be.
We're going to be.
All right.
So this is a... If I went into the whole history of candy, I'd have to go all the way back to, like, cavemen... eating like honeycomb from beehives
right.
and things of that nature. So
what that's typically that's a good one to start with though.
Yeah.
Is that would that be candy?
I guess when they're considering the history of candy, they do.
Well, what is candy defined?
They at least
as?
Think about it in terms of like here's something that's you know a
is
sugary
candy just
treat
any kind of sweet treat that people have or what is it?
Pretty much. I mean, but it doesn't really include like pastries and stuff.
Yeah, but. Yeah,
so
well, that's
it's
true.
It's kind of a narrowly it's kind of difficult to even know where the boundary of candy is. Like what where does like a pastry end and a candy begin?
Well, it's like you walk into like a if you go to a tourist trap and they have those candy stores, like yeah, there's a certain thing you expect and like if they had like we have cinnamon rolls, you'd be like that's cool, but is that
I
candy?
Guess you just have to think of candy as like anything that's like a confection that has to be made through a process where, you make it sweet or you're creating some kind of sweet treat that's not a pastry.
Well, but not all candy is sweet, though. Some candy is sour. Some candy is spicy.
Man, you're just... I don't even know.
There's more fucking...
I don't know how you
candy.
Qualify it. I mean, I did a whole episode of research on it. I don't even
Sounds
know what the
like
fuck it is.
Sounds like you didn't research anything, TJ.
Well, you'll find out how much I did. So let's start off... Oh, I wanted to say this. Because the history of candy is so long, and you can take it through ancient Egypt, you can take it through all these different places, there was no way we could even get through all that in one show. So I just focused on the rise of mass-manufactured processed candies in the United States of America.
Right. The type of stuff that fat fucks like us are going
right.
to
know and love.
Things that Paul and I are very familiar with, and Scotty is probably passingly familiar with. So it starts in what I call kind of like the food dark ages. See, in the early 1800s, food was almost exclusively prepared and eaten in one's own home with whatever ingredients a person could cobble together from their local area and its resources. Starvation was common. People ate dirt and rocks to prevent hunger pains. It was a dismal era. They didn't actually eat dirt and rocks. That was an embellishment of mine.
Damn.
I mean, maybe they did. I don't fucking know. But,
I fully believed that, TJ.
Yeah,
I did too,
know.
Dude.
I'm
sorry.
I was like, Jesus, they were eating dirt and rocks?
And fucking grass and shit? That sounds horrible, man.
Yeah.
Why don't you make that up, TJ? It's not funny.
I don't know. But, one thing that people, have a misapprehension about is they think, back then when people had to make all their own food and stuff that they ate healthier or better, but really they were just limited to whatever they could get. So it didn't matter. I mean, like there was no emphasis on like a well-rounded diet or anything like
people
that.
People were thinner because they did way more manual labor.
Yeah. They did a ton of manual labor and not only that, but they, I love how Paul goes off to cough, off mic to cough. Scotty goes off mic to cough. Everyone's
yeah,
coughing.
It's a round of coughing, dude.
My turn.
Yep.
The cough hour.
So, people were really limited to whatever resources they had around because there wasn't a store where there was food and goods from all over the place. Maybe a rich person could get that, but...
You could import some delicacies.
Right. If you're rich, you could maybe get food from all over the place. But,
most people didn't eat meat, even.
Yeah, I mean, they ate. Well, they ate meat if they're, you know, if they or their husband or whoever went out and shot a rabbit or a deer.
Yeah, wild
or something,
game, but yeah, know? But meat wasn't a part of every meal. Like people think that's like we like how we do.
No,
like,
I mean it was whatever they could get. Like,
well, they didn't have factory farming. They had, you had like either you had to slaughter your livestock, which was like they were worth more alive doing their task.
This is the pure way of living, right here, gentlemen. It's the way See, I knew mankind you'd take that stupid ought tack, to dude. Live, dude.
That's how you want to live, Paul.
Yes, off the land.
Paul, well, you'd be so fucking miserable, dude.
Things began to change in the 1820s, all right? So the first development that kind of leads us down the path to candy, mass manufactured candy and
what
shit.
What a wonderful time that was.
Is they in the 1820s, industrialization began to improve milling methods for flour. Now, obviously, flour is still the basis of a shitload of, like, baked goods that I'd be eating right now if it wasn't for this fucking Weight Watcher shit.
Is that something that you're having to like skimp on a lot is like the breads and shit?
Oh yeah, you can't eat too much bread and shit. Butter is really fucking awful for Weight Watchers.
Pretty much anything good.
Yeah, anything that actually you want to eat, pretty much.
Does
yeah,
it taste
it's on
good?
And you know what? My step mother-in-law or I don't know. Anyway, she gave us some food, because she's the kind of person you just can't say no to.
Yeah.
And so she gave Chelsea, like, some donuts and cakes and shit. And we had to bring them over here. And I'm going to try to saddle one of you guys with this shit, because I don't want it here. Because last night, in a moment of weakness, I ate one of those donuts. And, you know, that shot me over my fucking points for the day, man. So
Can I correct you? It wasn't a moment of weakness. Like, this is what happened. You saw that shit in your mind. You're all like,
yeah. I mean, yeah. Obviously, that's what fucking happened. Yeah.
There was no, like, it was a moment of weakness. That's what you tell Chelsea. That's what you're telling the people, dude. We all know the minute you saw that, you're like, 3 a.m., that's mine.
So, processed food really started to take hold in America after the Civil War. You see, troops during the war grew accustomed to eating some of the mass produced rations out of cans and jars, you know, because when you're killing your when you know it takes it's a lot of work driving like a bayonet through someone's fucking chest or something.
Right, and not only that, feeding these groups of people is something that people don't think about often.
It's logistically difficult. A lot of times, troops didn't get rations and actually had to rely on care packages sent from home. You know, if you're fucking camped in the woods before like the Battle of Shiloh, you're not going to be making fucking, you know, foie gras or some shit. Right. You know, you're getting field rations or you're getting care packages from home. And oftentimes it's care packages from home you're relying on because the military doesn't have the infrastructure to keep you supplied. It can't maintain the supply lines well enough to make sure you're always getting your ration of salted pork and beans and whatever else, you know, they got.
Or you're buying it from the vendors that follow these huge camps, too.
Another way they would get it, too, is when they'd forage it from the land. When they'd take a town or something, they'd sack the town of all its food stores and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Basically a banditry, yeah.
So because processed food became part of the soldiers' diet, a lot of them became
accustomed to it.
They grew to like the flavor of it, but more than that, they grew to like the convenience of it, because obviously it's much easier to open up a can and heat up the contents or maybe just eat them right out of the can or right out of the jar. It's a lot simpler to do that than to make something from fucking
scratch.
One of the
things, when you think about these products like candy, really high in sugar, so something you really have a strong desire to get and eat. You know, same thing with this. A lot of these, like, you have protein and you have a high salt content, which you also seek out, especially people
high calorie, so
calorically dense. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Most of the official rations that these soldiers got were things like salted pork, because the salt would preserve the pork.
Sure.
They also got this disgusting bread called hardtack. The colloquial terms for the soldiers gave to them are so telling. They called them tooth dullers, worm castles, and sheet iron crackers.
Wow.
So these things were apparently just awful. Like, you know, these are soldiers. They're men out there fighting and shit. And so you know if they're complaining about some crackers, there's got to be some hideous fucking crackers.
Oh, yeah. It just was probably just hard, stale bread.
Right, and it was huge problem. The reason they were called worm castles, it was hard to keep insects and stuff out of their food
weevils
supply.
Weevils and shit would get off in them.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys after a while probably just viewed that as extra fucking protein, you know? Mostly, this stuff was kept in, like, sacks rather than in jars. But apparently, a lot of, like, the jars and cans did pick up some steam around that time.
Got it.
It's kind of off topic, but I did find a little interesting fact I'd never heard before about the Civil War when I was looking at this. The South was rich in tobacco. They had all kinds of tobacco. And the North, they didn't have it. The North had all kinds of coffee, but the South, they were actually drinking this horrible coffee substitute that apparently was just hideous. So a lot of times soldiers on opposite sides of the conflict would get together, you know, when the officers weren't watching, and they'd trade mass quantities. You know, give me a bunch of tobacco, I'll give you a bunch of coffee.
Right.
You know, so even in the midst of war, people's addiction to these substances was causing them to cross enemy lines and make deals.
Yeah, you could look at it that way. You could look at it, because that's kind of a cynical way to look at it. You could also look at it as, like, human beings remain human despite this silly, like, border-based opposition that exists.
Right.
You know, like,
commerce still
battle
exists
is battle,
them.
And leisure time is leisure time,
yeah, hey,
and that's still a man over there you're fighting, you know?
I might be killing you tomorrow, but today, how about you give me some coffee and I'll give you some cigarettes?
Because I would be willing to bet that these meetings didn't just include, like, clandestine trades of stuff. I bet
no,
they sat down
not.
And smoked and drank that coffee together.
Oh, yeah, probably. They probably, maybe they conversed with each other. I mean, maybe they even sat down like, I hope, you know.
I mean, soldiers.
Maybe I'll be killing you tomorrow. I don't know.
Yeah, you're there to do a job. You don't have any say in what's going on. You're just like, you got to go fight. That's how it is. So they have to do their job, and they know that what they're bound to do. But
yeah,
that doesn't mean they necessarily hate those other people. They're, like Paul said, they're just other humans. They have a desire to smoke, and they have a desire to drink this coffee.
And everyone's heard about that battle where on Christmas Day there was a ceasefire, and the two armies got together and, you know, actually got to know each other as human beings and shit.
Right.
And that's an inspiring story. Where's the inspiring story here of, you know, where's the movie based on this? Coffee and cigarettes, you know, getting together.
That would be pretty dope movie. Like, instead of focusing on the horrors of the battle, just focus on, you know, one little company of dudes that ends up becoming friends with another company of dudes on the other side.
Yeah, because they're trading coffee and cigarettes.
Yeah, they're in a standoff and they're, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, the beauty of commerce and of fulfilling the needs of your fellow man, even when they're on the opposite side of a fucking
something
brutal
communists
conflict.
Will never understand.
Anyway, so as I said, when the war ended, some soldiers had developed a taste for mass-produced foods and a love of its convenience. It's obviously much easier to, you know, get that to make that to eat that than it is to make something from scratch with all the, you know, difficulties associated with even scrounging up the resources to do that.
Right.
It's a tremendous time waster to feed yourself in those times. I mean, it's not a time waster because it's an absolute necessity, but processed food makes that a little easier. And, you know, I have this image here up of the American dream never really existed. It was a marketing scam because really, I think that that's at the heart of America's obsession with convenience is, if it's more convenient to feed yourself, more time you can work for somebody else, you know? And that's why the top drug in America to this day is like various forms of speed, like this fucking Red Bull I'm drinking or the Starbucks coffee. That's why there's a Starbucks on every fucking corner.
Yeah.
You know, keep us fueled. Everything has to be as easy as possible, as fast as possible. Like, you go to Europe and, like, the pace of, like, a dinner service, if you go to a restaurant, is so much slower there. Because it doesn't have that American emphasis, that right. insane emphasis on just like fast, efficient, give it to me now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that really is, that's really a vital component of this topic because
sure,
it's
yeah.
all about hey, here's a quick little candy and a thing that you just eat, and it's sugar and it's energy and go.
Well, think about how do they market Snickers? Think about that now. It's
right.
Like this person
hungry?
Is like,
why
like,
wait?
He's in a bind. Yeah, he's in a bind. It's like you're waiting. Bam! This is something. It's like it's not really good for you, but it's gonna sate you. It's gonna fucking that fat's gonna take you to the next time you actually get some real food. You know what yep. I mean?
So, do you guys have any idea what the first sort of I kind of question whether it is the first American candy, but
I know what the first wrapped candy was, but I don't know what the first American candy was.
So, it's kind of debatable, but one contender at least is something that was created by this guy.
Is it a lemon drop or something? It's got to be like a hard candy, right?
It was created by this guy named
Gummy?
This is Frederick Ruckheim. And he created the Cracker Jack.
Oh, the Cracker Jack, dude.
Yeah. Along with his brother, Louis Ruckheim.
The Cracker Jack, man.
Yes.
Yeah, I used to love these when I was a kid.
Look at this box. It's almost more concerned with letting you know that they own this than it is presenting the Cracker Jack.
Well, back then, you probably had to do that shit.
This is our trademark. Trademark registered in U.S. Patent Office, March 24th. Don't even try to steal this shit, bitch. Yeah. This is ours. We invented this.
You got to imagine enforcement of such things back in the day, and the ability for people to even know that this scam was going on somewhere in the world was probably not that great. Like, somebody could buy a box of Cracker Jacks, like it, take it across the country, and just start selling Cracker Jacks. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, and it was,
oh, for sure.
Like I said, it was a pair of German immigrant brothers named Friedrich and Louis Ruckheim. And legend has it that the name Cracker Jack came from a customer who, upon trying the treat, exclaimed, "That really a Cracker Jack?" And the name stuck. However, that story is total bullshit.
Oh,
Cracker Jack was a slang expression at the time that meant something very pleasing or excellent. And that's way more likely to be the origin.
You know how Cracker Jacks have totally fallen out of favor? Because, like, the seventh inning stretch, like, give me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. You know, it's like, but if you go to a baseball game, I don't think I've ever seen them selling Cracker Jacks ever. And I've been to, like, at least five or six professional baseball
games. Give me some peanuts and
Cracker Jacks. They sell the shots of hot dogs and nachos and shit.
I don't care if I never get
maybe it was the first, but it's definitely not really had any staying power. I mean, it's still around.
I mean, hey, it's still here after more than 100 years.
I don't know anyone that eats this shit. Do you guys eat, like, I mean, you said you ate it as a kid, I guess.
I loved it.
I mean, I've had a box of Cracker Jacks.
If I saw a box of Cracker Jacks, I might buy it now just out of nostalgia's sake. But, like, really, Cracker Jacks have been supplanted by the greater, like, candied popcorn industry.
Yeah,
basically.
Dude.
Caramel corn, dude.
It was introduced in 1893 at the Chicago World's Fair. There was nothing really even then particularly novel about the recipe. I don't know if anyone had exactly made it before, but, like, there was candied popcorn treats.
Sure.
It's popcorn, molasses, and peanuts. That's all that's in a Cracker Jack.
Yeah, but this is about branding, dude. This is about, like...
Well,
like,
that's what I was about to say, is that the true brilliance of the Ruckheim brothers was not in the treat. Although, I mean, I'm sure it was really good for the time, whatever. It was about marketing. Because they came up with something that is still used to this day, not quite as much, but the concept of... There's a prize in the box.
Oh, yeah, damn.
Yeah. That's the big
one. When I was a kid, that was like all the big kid cereals had prizes in the box,
yeah.
Or at least like you could send away for something.
And dude, it was such a good motivator. I remember like me, you'd see a commercial and be like, oh my God, I need whatever. I need fucking Fruit Loops to get the monkey or whatever.
Yeah, dude. That's right. So they came up with that. That's their marketing contribution to America, and it's still used to this day. And companies obviously still use this sort of incentive to get people to do stuff. Maybe it's not quite as common as it was, but
I actually got a box of these.
Yeah,
because I went to some ice cream place and like you get Cracker Jacks some promotion. I'm like, all right, I guess I'll take them in the box. And now it's like a lame sticker, dude.
Oh, it sucks now.
It totally fucking
sucks. It
kind
of always sucks.
It did. It sucked when I was a kid too.
But it's
gotten worse.
It's a sticker now.
Yeah.
So I mean, even though the prize has sucked, and honestly, the snack is not really that great.
It's just like stale caramel corn.
Dude. By 1916, it was the best-selling snack on the face of the earth.
What?
Yes. The best-selling snack on Earth in 1916,
people
Cracker Jack.
We're fucking stupid back then, dude. There's no doubt about it.
But, you know, you have to remember, its competition at the time was shit like good and plenty.
Right.
Which was also invented in 1893.
Also not that great.
Yeah, it's...
I like a good and plenty.
The World's Fair here.
Maybe you like it in theory, Paul. I've never seen you buy one or mention one.
This is the 1893 World's Fair. There was a serial killer running around seducing people into a crazy death hotel.
Oh.
And there's a lot of shit that happened around this fair. This is where the Cracker Jack was introduced. I don't think it was where Good and Plenty was introduced. But anyway, a little bit about Good and Plenty. It was also, as I said, invented in 1893. It's believed by some people to be the oldest branded candy in the United States of America. So credit where credit's due. Cracker Jack, still around. Good and Plenty, still around. Neither of them has the sort of market dominance that they once enjoyed.
But they're still there.
But they are still there.
You can still get
them. Probably owned by one of these conglomerates.
They are.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know who owns Cracker Jack. I know Hershey owns Good and Plenty.
Of course.
So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing that they're still around. Now, this guy is the next guy we're going to be talking about. And it's really sort of debatable. This is why I kind of have doubts about the idea that Cracker Jack or Good and Plenty is the first candy. Because in 1842, this guy here named Stephen F. Whitman.
Oh, shit.
He opened a confectionery and fruiterer in Philadelphia. Now, you know, we don't really have fruiterers anymore.
Is that like a place that like dries and cans fruit?
I guess. I have no idea because I've never heard the term fruiterer until I did this. But he was a confectioner and fruiterer. Fruiterer. I love the word. You probably recognize the name Whitman, I'm sure, because the company he started still exists to this day. Been going strong for 177 years now. It's, of course, most famous for its Whitman sampler, which the company started selling in 1912. Oh, yeah. But the company started selling its first packaged, the first packaged confection ever for retail sale, which you see right here, mixed sugar plums.
Whoa.
Stephen F. Whitman's. And, you know, it's a pretty ornate and elaborate-looking box.
Dude.
What's a sugar plum, man?
Well, I actually was wondering that, because we all probably remember it from
sugar
visions of sugar plums danced in their heads.
From the Clement Moore poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas, which is more widely known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, because that's a way better title.
Yep.
But if you want to know what a sugar plum is, I could tell you. I mean, what do you think it is?
A plum dipped in sugar?
Yeah, like a dried plum rolled in sugar.
Yeah, well, actually, plums have nothing to do with the fucking process at all.
Okay, so it's...
What it actually is, and it'll be pretty apparent very shortly after why I tell you this, why you don't know what a sugar plum is, because it obviously has been competed out of the marketplace. A sugar plum is a seed, nut, or scrap of spice coated with a layer of hard sugar, like the crunchy outer case of an M&M. So yeah, it's pretty shitty candy.
So it's like a candied nut, basically.
Here's a sugar plum. Here's a traditional sugar plum. These are little sticks of cinnamon, and they've been coated with layers upon layers of sugar.
Sugar. So it's just sugar and spice.
Sugar and spice.
Sugar and a nut.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nut covered in this hard sugar shell, or it's something like that.
Weird.
Covered in a hard sugar
casing. Why would they
call
them plums?
I have no fucking idea. The process to making those wasn't easy either. The sugar coatings had to be gradually built up over time, first adding sugar syrup with a special funnel called a purling funnel or cot, then shimmying the candies in a hot pan. This process called panning had to be repeated for hours or days on end, until up to 30 layers of sugar had been added to the mix.
Whoa.
And since they were so massively labor intensive, they were very pricey.
So they were like a special fucking treat.
They were either
a sugar plum.
That's why the kids.
That's why visions of sugar plums.
Because it's like, oh, it's Christmas. We get sugar plums. Because mostly it was a treat for the aristocracy.
Right.
It wasn't something that a common person could just easily afford because the process to make it was so long and difficult and labor intensive.
Interesting.
So they and you, as you could see from this picture, they tended to be lumpy, uneven, and also,
dude, you know that tastes good as fucking shit.
It probably does because it's just sugar syrup. It's hardened.
But we'll and these that.
The secrets of this industry, by the way, were extremely well guarded.
Well, of course,
they did not want anyone to know how to make this shit.
Well, because they had a fucking
right
market on it.
Yeah, and they wanted to corner the market, and they did, and that's why they could charge exorbitant prices if they knew how to do this skill.
But, dude, it's
crazy
because it's so much different now. It's like candy. It's like, yeah, I mean, I know you're probably going to get into this more, but to get to mass market, it's like, obviously, this isn't affordable for the average person. So, like you said, this is basically limited to, like, the wealthiest in society. This is not something that a common person is going to get very often.
No, not at all. This is not – it's a special treat, like Christmas Day kind of thing. So the next guy we're going to talk about, and I'm sure you're going to immediately know what he's about when I say his name. This is Milton Hershey.
Well, I know the name, but looking at this picture, I would say what he's about is remaining hidden for long enough to subjugate humanity and then ripping off his human skin to reveal his scaly reptiloid underbelly.
You don't like him, huh?
Look at those eyes, dude.
Yeah.
I know it's probably just an artifact of the old picture technology, but this picture is unsettling.
Yeah, well, he founded his own candy shop in Philadelphia in 1873. But he wasn't really quite ready to take the world by storm in 1873. And his business actually folded after 6 years. Now, at that point, he had spent years and years as a confectioner's apprentice. He finally had gone off and tried to strike his own way in the world, open his own candy shop. It did dismally. It failed. After 6 years, it closed. So he went back to being an apprentice for the next 13 years, and he worked learning the secrets of making caramel.
Okay.
And finally, after learning how to do the caramel shit and being an apprentice for another 13 years, he decided he was going to give starting his own business another try. So he started the Lancaster Caramel Company. And it was a pretty big success. He had his recipe for caramel incorporated milk, which I guess other recipes didn't.
Right.
And it gave it a sort of richness that people liked. And so he actually was quite prosperous as a caramel maker, candy thing. Caramel is one of those words that everyone likes to say differently.
Caramel.
I don't care what you say. Carmel. That's what he was doing. Caramel.
Come on.
So then he went to the very same World's Fair where Cracker Jack made their debut, and he saw something in 1893. He saw a chocolate-making machine.
Oh.
And he was inspired. So the very next year, after he saw that chocolate-making machine, in 1894, he opened Hershey Chocolate Company as a subsidiary of the Lancaster Caramel Company.
Okay.
By 1900, he decided that running two companies was too much. He wanted to just focus on one, and so he sold the Lancaster Caramel Company and decided to focus all of his energy on the Hershey Chocolate Company. So he sold the caramel company for $1 million, which is about $30 million in today's dollars.
Yeah.
And when he was asked about this decision, he would just tell people, caramels are a fad, but chocolate is a permanent thing.
He's kind of right. I mean, I guess he's wrong, but right.
Mm-hmm.
Caramel and chocolate now, dude. He didn't even think. Dude, yeah. Think about the amazing shit he had right at his finger. He owned a fucking caramel company.
Yes.
He owns a chocolate company.
Yeah.
If you did not think of just taking
those two together yet.
But whatever. I mean, I guess he did well for himself anyway.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, his brand exists to this day. Here is an original Hershey bar. And Paul, you were talking earlier about you know, how this was viewed as like an energy thing. Just look at the advertising here, you know.
More sustaining than meat, damn.
A sweet to eat.
More sustaining than meat?
Yes. So he's actually marketing this not just as like, this is a candy treat. This is being marketed as, this is This is great.
Well, there's no regulations.
This is a meal on the go.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think advertising regulations at this time are probably pretty lax if they existed at all.
I don't even know if, I don't know what, if any
could you literally just like do like, could you put Cures arthritis on there or whatever?
Probably. It was 1900 when he introduced the Hershey bar. According to Wikipedia, the Hershey process milk chocolate in these bars uses fresh milk delivered directly from local dairy farms. The process was developed by Milton Hershey and produced the first mass-produced chocolate in the United States. As a result, the Hershey flavor is widely recognized in the United States, but less so internationally, especially in areas where European chocolates are more widely available.
Dude, I can tell you what, online, the reputation of Hershey's outside of America, and really even within America, is like, it's shit.
Yeah.
As far as chocolate, it's like, I mean, maybe back then it was good, I can't speak to that.
Well, I guess that other chocolate companies in America actually add things to their chocolate to make it taste more like Hershey's chocolate, because Hershey's defines for Americans what chocolate tastes like.
I would say that's true to a degree. Think about like s'mores and shit. Like you see it like every time you don't see any other candy package. You see it, it's like there's like the, that. I forget what the Jet Puff marshmallows, whatever it is, and then it's like the
yeah.
Then it's like Hershey's chocolate.
The process by which they make the chocolate is a trade secret, but experts speculate that the milk is partially lipolyzed, producing butyric acid, which stabilizes the milk from further fermentation. This flavor gives the product a particularly sour, tangy taste that the U.S. public has come to associate with the taste of chocolate. Now, I don't taste any tanginess or sourness in a Hershey.
I mean, I think if you put it next to a non-American chocolate, you'd probably be able to taste what they're talking about there.
Probably. So the American bar's taste profile was not popular with the Canadian public. So in 1983, Hershey actually introduced a different recipe for Canada that didn't have that tangy taste that Americans love in their chocolate.
Weird, dude. I want to get a Canadian Hershey bar and then an American one and taste it.
So let's take a look at what Hershey is up to today. They make Hershey bars, Hershey Kisses, Reese's peanut butter cups. And
Reese's.
All, Reese's peanut butter cups and all of their fucking products. I don't know.
I'm kidding. It's actually Reese's.
Reese's.
I was you said Reese's.
Yeah, well, I tried to correct myself.
And I know.
So whatever. Kit Kat,
Hershey's
bars,
drops, dude. That sounds good.
Twizzlers, Brookside, which is kind of a higher end looking chocolate. Ice Breakers, Jolly Ranchers, Almond Joy, Mounds, Payday, Rolo, York. If you look on their hard-to-find brands section here, which maybe it'll let me do. I don't know. Can we do that? Thank you.
I remember that one.
Oh, yeah, the Fifth Avenue bar.
Yeah. They're also responsible. Fifth Avenue.
Cadbury eggs?
No.
No?
Only Cadbury Caramello.
Oh.
For some reason, Mars controls every other Cadbury product, but Hershey has this one. I don't know how that works. Oh. I tried to figure it out. I couldn't. Good and Plenty, as I mentioned earlier, Heath, Mr. Good Bar, Score, which I really like Score bars, Symphony, which I haven't seen since like the fucking 90s.
Yeah, I didn't even remember them until just now.
Take
Same
Five.
Thing with
I actually like these Take like Fives, those, yeah. But they,
I haven't seen
Whatchamacallit,
them.
Whatchamacallit, that's a good one. Oh, yeah. Whoppers, you can find those at the theaters.
Yeah, I did Whoppers.
Zero, and this Zagnut bar, so fucking rare that even they don't fucking have it, but apparently it's still being made. I've never even seen one of these.
The only reason that I know about what this candy existing is Beetlejuice.
Was it? It was in Beetlejuice.
Yeah. He when he's a cockroach, he goes after a Zagnut bar or whatever. When he's that giant cockroach, he's eating a Zagnut.
What a Zagnut?
No, I don't. It looks kind of shit.
Yeah, it's not really a good looking.
Doesn't
candy.
Really look that great.
I don't know. I want to try it. I wish we could just get one of each of these weird fucking candies and take a bite of
well,
it.
Well,
don't worry if we can.
Even their website won't sell it to you.
Yeah, you can't even get a Zagnut from them.
You right can't now. Get a Zagnut direct from the manufacturer of Zagnuts. So
bullshit,
best of
dude.
Fucking luck to you.
I'm gonna fucking find a Zagnut right now.
So the company that's the second, like Hershey is the third biggest candy maker in the U.S. But in for my money, they're actually the first, because every other company that is above them as a candy maker sells shit other than candy. Hershey is the only company that purely sells candies. They're number three overall.
Company isn't diversified at all. They don't have any kind of like real estate portfolio.
Don't they have like a theme park and a few other little things?
I mean, they probably have some other stuff, but primarily they are a fucking candy maker. That's what they do.
So you view them as pure candy makers?
I view them as the most pure of the candy makers that we that are on the top of the game.
Okay.
Sure.
So
but by the numbers, they're third.
Yes. So number two is a company called Mondelez International, which you might think is some kind of foreign company, but it's actually located in Illinois.
That's probably the name of one of the founders.
Now, I never even heard of this company. Have you guys heard of this company?
No. Yeah, I know they're a conglomerate, basically.
They are a huge conglomerate. I'd never heard of them. But basically, in 2011, Kraft Foods decided to split into two companies. The snack division became Mondelez International, Inc., which is what we're looking at. The grocery one stayed Kraft Foods. Then it merged with Heinz and became Kraft Heinz. But that's besides the point. Mondelez makes fucking everything. They own Nabisco, so they make Oreos, Chips Ahoy, and Ritz crackers. They make those the premium saltines. You know, you probably recognize the fucking logo.
Oh, yeah. Dude, what are you talking about?
Right here.
Yeah, dude.
They make the premium fucking saltines. They make Sour Patch Kids. They make Trident Gum.
They make Ritz, dude.
They make Toblerones. They make Wheat Thins. Yeah, they make Ritz Crackers.
These motherfuckers basically
They basically make half the shit in Paul's pantry. And as I
fuck you. You're right.
As I mentioned earlier,
do they own the fucking snack aisle?
I'm sorry, I misspoke earlier. I said Mars owns the other Cadbury products. It's actually Mondelez that owns the other Cadbury products.
Okay.
So,
dude, enjoy life. Yeah, do they fucking own like half the fucking brands?
For some reason, like even though Cadbury Caramellos are made by Hershey's, all the other Cadbury products are made by Mondelez.
I'm telling you.
Cadbury cream eggs, Cadbury dairy.
What are your thoughts on
Cadbury eclairs, Cadbury roses? Go
ahead.
What are your thoughts on the classic Cadbury egg, dude? Yes,
I don't really give a fuck about it.
Will you eat one?
Yeah.
Because like some people are legitimately disgusted by them.
No.
No, dude. What, really? Dude, I like Cadbury eggs. They're good, dude. I love
them. I've met people that, like, they're just grossed out by the weird, like, you bite into the chocolate and it's, like, filled with sweet pus in there, you know?
Fuck no, dude. That's just, like, fucking, oh, dude, it's so sweet and delicious.
I know. I love a Cadbury cream egg, dude.
I'm not crazy. I'm not cuckoo for it, but, you know, whatever.
Are you cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, TJ?
So, I actually kind of am. But, anyway. So these scary fucks that I don't like are the Mars family. It's one of the Mars is one of the largest privately owned companies in America. It has no plans whatsoever to go public. It doesn't want shareholders. It's a company that likes doing things its own way. It's a family business owned to this day by the Mars family, who are notoriously tight-lipped and reclusive. As of 2016, so I don't know if this stands anymore because things change quick in America, but as of 2013, they were the third richest family in America, surpassed only by the Waltons and the Cox. they don't give interviews, and they very rarely even allow themselves to be photographed.
This is obviously like a photograph from a wedding or a family.
Yeah, this is some kind of family get together. I don't know if this was a publicity photo that they took to put out themselves. But as far as the press goes, they don't like being photographed. They don't talk to the press very much. They have about the minimal sort of relationship with the press that you need to have in America. They're a very reclusive family. And, Paul, you said you think that's actually a wise way to be if you have a fortune of their size.
Oh, yeah, dude. If I was, like, a multi-billionaire, I would not... you'd never see me. You'd never hear from me. I wouldn't... You know, because, like, involving yourself in that is just asking for a layer of scummy fucking people trying to inject themselves into your lives. Like, if you've got the money to basically subsidize your life in every way, why would you want other people prying into that?
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely sympathize with that. But what kind of scares me about it is just that this one family controls so many fucking things. Because they have, aside from selling popular candy items like Mars bars, Milky Way, M&Ms, Skittles, Snickers, and Twix, they also make snacks like Combos. They make Uncle Ben's rice, Dolmio pasta sauce.
They need to apologize for fucking Combos. Those things are fucking disgusting.
I like Combos. They own several pet food brands, including Pedigree, Whiskas, Nutro, and Royal Canin.
What is the idea of owning multiple brands that all compete with one another? I guess that's the
idea, to flood
idea,
the market,
right?
Dude.
Yeah. And also,
you own more market share.
Like Royal Canin is kind of like their upper crusty more brand,
that
and Pedigree is kind of their like lower tier brand, and you know, so they're trying to target different demographics within the same marketplace. They also own pet hospitals like Banfield.
Oh, Banfield, really?
They own all the Banfield pet hospitals and the Blue Pearl pet hospitals, which is another big pet hospital chain. They make coffee makers and coffees under the Mars Drinks brand, which was recently renamed Lavazza Professional. They make cocoa-based supplements under the Coco Via brand. They're huge in the gum world. They own Wrigley's, so Juicy Fruit, Big Red, Double Mint, Wrigley's Extra, Hubba Bubba, all the varieties of Orbit gum they also own. It'd probably take me an entire episode just listing off their fucking assets. They just own so much fucking shit. It's fucking insane.
That's pretty insane. I had no idea.
And I mean, like, we're talking about all of these brands that we're all familiar with that are just all singularly owned by one family. And that's pretty unusual.
It's incredibly unusual.
We learned about this, like, and basically, like, the mass manufacturing of food, how it's just like, it makes it seem like there's all these different brands, but in reality, they're really not.
Yeah.
It's like you think, each one of these represents a company. That's right. That's the way it's branded to you, but it's actually, that's bullshit.
Each one of these is pushed as if it's its own company. Like when you see a Kit Kat commercial, I don't know which one of these companies does Kit Kat. I think it was Hershey. They talk about like, here at the Kit Kat factory at Kit Kat headquarters, there's no fuck. It's
right.
It's it's all one big
and
giant
and
fucking
all these conglomerates,
clusterfuck.
I guarantee you, all collude too. So there's even less competition.
They make Three Musketeers bars, too, which I really fucking love. Anyway, so they were started in 1911 by this guy. This droopy-eyed.
The devil.
Yeah, basically, just related to Adolf Hitler Mao, maybe.
He looks like the devil from Needful Things, kind of.
Yeah, he does.
His name was Franklin Clarence Mars. He started Mars Inc., in Tacoma, Washington, but it didn't really do well there. Just like how Hershey had a false start, this guy also had his own false start. If there's any sort of inspirational story to be gleaned from any of this shit, don't give up just because you fail once. Try again. Because sometimes the second try is an enormous success that no one could have possibly foreseen. The reason he couldn't make it in Tacoma, Washington is he had too much fucking competition. There was just too many fucking people making candy. So he went back to where he was born, I think, or some his old childhood hometown, Minneapolis, Minnesota, where for a brief time the company was known as Morrow Bar Co. And then they realized that sucked and they changed it back to Mars.
This name is really
good.
Bad.
Choice.
Sounds like a meat company, the Morrow.
So he raised his son up in the confectioner tradition. His son, Forrest Mars, actually seems to have been much more instrumental in bringing the company to the forefront. He invented the Milky Way, which became their best-selling candy bar.
Milky Way is pretty damn good.
I can't shit on a Milky Way.
Right.
I don't really, it's not my favorite but I'm never sad that I've got a Milky Way in my pocket.
His son, Forrest, also developed the Mars bar, which is, of course, kind of their signature item, even if it's not maybe the most popular. And he also developed M&M's.
Oh, shit, dude. M&M's.
Yeah, and as far as M&M's go, they were actually originally... this is his son, Forrest Mars, by the way.
Gump? Oh, okay.
No.
Oh, okay.
Actually, he was a kind of a genius, so be the opposite of Forrest Gump.
Dude, M&M's have...
E equals MC squared.
E equals M&M's squared.
It almost seems obvious, but it's like when you have a candy like this, they're just so... It's so useful. It's like you get to eat chocolate, but you don't have to have it fucking sit... Because you know if you hold chocolate in your hands, unless you're just putting it right into your mouth.
Melts in your mouth, not in your hand.
I know, dude. It's so brilliant.
So originally, these were actually sold exclusively to the military. But as in the case of the Civil War soldiers becoming addicted to processed foods, soldiers became addicted to this.
Fuck yeah, dude.
And so when they stopped being soldiers, like, man, I wish I could still get those little fucking chocolate candies with the shell around them. So before long, they were making it for everybody. Interestingly enough, the first M&Ms were filled with Hershey's chocolate.
Ooh.
And the reason for that was because Hershey actually controlled the entire chocolate ration to the U.S. Army. His contract was so... expansive and lucrative that no one else could sell chocolate to the military.
See,
so,
I like Mr. Hershey. Yeah. He had it right.
He was cutthroat.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a brutal fuck.
See, I got to walk through a Hershey factory when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was a field trip we got to take, and there was one in the Central Valley. It's in between L.A. and Fresno, where I grew up. And it was pretty fucking amazing, dude. Like, just rode... Like, they had these special rooms for people to watch the big rows of machines pooping out
candy.
Kisses. You know, that was the one that really burned into my mind, was the machine that, like, pooped out the little Hershey kisses.
Yeah.
It was amazing to watch. And you could just see, like, even back then when I was a kid, like, how many thousands of these they're making, like, a minute in just this factory.
Oh, it's insane. And I think, like, the M&Ms, there were some statistics I saw on those. It was just, like, billions of them. Just, like,
I can't even imagine.
Pouring out of there. And
by the way, this picture has something in it that's controversial to me. Is
what
it
is
controversial
that?
To you?
Oh, the blue M&M?
Yep. Get the fucking blue M&M.
We're
going
to talk about
it. Okay,
talk
good.
About
I'm,
it.
Glad right. you, I'm glad we're going right. to cover the controversy.
We are going to cover the controversy. You will have a chance. I just wanted to, I kind of wanted to point out how kind war has been to the candy and processed foods business.
You're right.
Because it's kind of like when you have soldiers... You can almost get them addicted to certain things and just be like, now you're used to this, so
dude, a lot of
go
really
forth
do.
And be good consumers.
Even now, a lot of MREs have candy bars in them.
Right.
Well, yeah. And what you said earlier about the Civil War, too, these soldiers came home with kind of a craving for this shit, and they pass it along to their family. Their family tries it, and they get a craving for it. So
yep.
You can see how it all exploded and how war is kind of at the heart of it. These chocolate guys are all fucking war profiteers.
They
man.
Are, dude. What the fuck?
Yeah. So anyway, interesting fact I always liked about M&M's and Reese's Pieces. See, in 1982, the Mars Candy Company rejected the inclusion of M&M's in the new Steven Spielberg movie E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
They did not want M&M's to be associated
yeah,
with this
with
thing.
With an ugly
right. they
alien
didn't get
creature.
What a cultural fucking phenomenon was right. about to happen.
And once again, Hershey is kind of a little more savvy because their company's like, fuck that. We got the Reese's Pieces, whatever the yeah. fuck. No one's eating that. We could use the fucking promotion. And, of course, it's Reese's Pieces are very similar to M&M's. They just have peanut butter filling.
Not as good, though.
And after the movie came out, sales of the candy increased 300%.
I believe it. I remember this movie being a big thing. It was one. It's one of the first movies I remember being like a big cultural thing. I saw it. It was super special to me. And I remember eating Reese's Pieces because of this movie.
Right.
Every kid... Like, their inclusion in the film, too, was so smart. To have the little alien steal some and then get kind of addicted to Reese's Pieces, it allows you to insert your fucking product all throughout the film in a way that doesn't feel like product placement.
Right.
I mean, it obviously is rank, obvious product placement.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Totally.
But 100%. When you're watching it, especially as a little kid, it just comes off as like, oh, wow, that little alien likes Reese's Pieces, man.
Oh, dude, that probably the audience fucking in tears, dude. That's like that's kind of the thing that just like the audience really is going to like. It's going to be like a funny little moment. It's like he just wants them so badly.
This movie was super special to me when I was a kid, but it's a movie I can't watch anymore. I don't mean to go too far aside and give a review of E.T.
Why is that?
It's disturbing. Yeah. It really is genuinely kind of like in an uncanny valley way to me. I still kind of feel the same feelings I felt when I was a little kid. I still like the story, and I get excited at the same parts and sad at the same parts, but there's this draped kind of like dread over it all. it all centers too around his, like when he gets sick. You remember when E.T. gets sick towards the end?
Right.
Oh yeah.
And
dude,
he's all pale and sickly, and they all the weird science shit that they have and the weird drape thing they put over his body. I can't look at that no more. I don't know what it is. When I was a little kid, I loved it. And as an adult, it kind of creeps
me out.
E.T.
is too intense now.
Yeah.
So let's get back to M&M's because we're not quite done. And we want to talk about the controversy here. I don't know if it's really much of a controversy, but here's a chart that shows M&M colors throughout the years because the colors have not, as you can see, been consistent over time.
Sure.
Well, some of them have been.
You'll notice that the tan M&M met its untimely demise exactly when the blue M&M was produced.
Fuck the tan M&M,
now,
dude.
The reason is because in early 1995, Mars ran a promotion in which consumers were invited to vote on which of pink, blue, pink, or purple, you know, which of those colors was going to replace the tan M&Ms. Blue was the decisive winner with 54% of the vote. As far as anyone knows, the decision to get rid of tan M&Ms just boiled down to the brand deciding that having two shades of brown was weird and that tan wasn't really particularly interesting as a color. But you see,
such bull fucking shit.
The original colors were brown, yellow, green, red, and violet.
Interesting. Why didn't they bring that back?
I don't know. But violet did not last long. It was quickly replaced with tan. You see also here there's a weird little period where they stopped doing red.
Yeah, there was a weird time like between, like, I guess during my childhood.
The 70s and all throughout the 80s, there was no fucking red M&Ms.
So I guess,
well, not all, no, not quite all throughout the 80s, but
the first 5 years of the 80s. So I would,
the
first, I don't
like,
have many memories.
Seven
of
or
that.
So years of the 80s, there was no fucking red M&Ms.
Weird. I don't remember there not being red M&Ms, but I would have been alive during that time.
Yeah, so you were definitely alive and of the age of consciousness.
But there were orange M&Ms. Yeah, I always remember there being.
So it kind of looks like they got rid of red and introduced orange and then brought red back. So they're just like, fuck it, we need that.
Huh.
So
I like the tan M&Ms, and I think the blue M&Ms are
really indecision.
Incredibly out of place in the pantheon of the M&M color. I think that blue sticks out like a sore thumb. It's reminiscent of the green apple fucking Skittle maneuver that the Mars Corporation pulled, where they replaced the lime Skittle. And it's probably for one of the same reasons. They were just like, well, we already got a lemon Skittle, so what's the need for a lime Skittle? And now you eat a bag of Skittles and basically you got a mouthful of apple candy. This is the same shit, man. It is
jarring.
No, it
is not. It's the same fucking thing, Paul. It's just blue. What do you have against the color blue?
I don't have anything against the color
blue. You must, because you're like, no, it shouldn't be blue. It tastes the same, Paul.
Blue, here, there's a candy.
Okay, let's blindfold you. And we'll give you one of each and tell me which color it is.
I will. I will.
Okay.
I'll do it.
Because I bet you fucking fail.
I will know
the
blue ones.
The blind M&M taste test.
If there was some discernible difference, like the blue one is filled with caramel or something, then I could understand. But it's the same fucking thing.
Yeah, so let's take a look at some of the top-selling candies in America. Sorry, started place in the list. So let's go back up. All right. America's 10 favorite chocolate candies. This is from 2015, so things might have changed since then, but as of that
2018,
year,
TJ, couldn't find that for us?
No.
Fucking lazy sack of shit.
So, number 10, Almond Joy.
What?
Which I did not even know people ate this shit, but apparently a lot of people do.
62 million unit
revenue
sales.
Generated 60.8 million, unit sales 62.2 million.
I hate these.
This is from Peter Paul Candy Manufacturing, which was established in 1919. He invented the Almond Joy in 1946. I don't like them. Does anyone here like them? Do you like Almond Joys, Paul?
Well, the problem with Almond Joy has always been for me that they have nuts. And Mounds, as you know, don't.
Right.
And I prefer the don't.
There you go.
So sometimes I don't really end up feeling like a nut.
Number nine, the Milky
Hell
Way.
Yeah, dude, I think you're buying this one.
70 million in sales, probably in 2014, I would imagine, since this came out in 2015. We already know the kind of little, the history of this.
I'm not a big fan of the Milky. I mean, I like a Milky Way bar, but it's not my
favorite.
Yeah,
you're not
going
to seek it out, yeah. I don't like this one.
Hershey's Cookies and Cream.
Mm-mm. I gotta say, this one right here is a rare treat. It's not one that you want all the time, but goddamn, every once in a while, a Hershey's
cookie. If you're in the mood, it'll hit the spot.
Oh,
Scotty don't like
yes.
it. Now, here's my shit
Hell
right
yeah,
here.
Dude, I love this one.
I love me some Three Musketeers, motherfucker.
Is it the texture that does it for you? That like, kind of like marshmallowy, pillowy mouthfeel?
Yeah, that fucking filling,
yes,
dude.
It is.
Like, when you bite into that, it just has like, oh, dude.
I like how
so
the filling is so delicate that it's the airy. Chocolate
it's,
shell
it's,
feels kind of like almost like a candy
well, yeah,
shell.
It's like so,
yeah.
it's like the inside's so whipped, you know? It's like they whipped like a million
yeah,
fucking times.
Dude, that
dude.
Shit is so fucking good. 100 million in sales.
I like
Twix.
A Three Musketeers, yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude. Twix.
I love
Twix. This is my fucking, this is my favorite mass
my
manufactured
big
candy.
Beef with Twix back when I was a little fat kid and deciding on candies.
Not enough.
Yeah. I always felt like a standard size Snicker bar, I was getting more candy than with a
you.
Double Twix.
That is true, but a Twix is better.
And they're trying to sell it to you like you got two of them, but the two that you've got, if you put it together and look at what candy you're actually getting,
yeah.
you're getting way less candy.
Dude, that's why you had to get the double Twix, dude, like the fucking big bag.
Oh, yeah, the big
king
honker.
Size
give
one
me
Twix.
A break.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Oh, dude, Kit Kat's
break
good,
me
dude.
Off a piece of that Kit Kat.
It's simple,
bar.
But it's really good.
And see, Kit Kat figured it out because Kit Kat has kind of similar to a.
Yeah, they also do the multiple bars.
But they
thing.
Give you a brick. Because they're just yeah. like, we understand that this two of these little things is not a giant candy
you know
bar.
What, you know what's so good about Kit Kat, too, is like there's so many different flavors that actually just work with it perfectly. So you can have, I mean, there's so many different ways you can go
oh,
with
dude,
it.
These are great with, like, coffee.
Oh,
you can
yeah.
stir your coffee with a Kit Kat,
you
dude.
Ain't lying.
Yeah.
Tell me about it, dude.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude. I agree with this one.
The classic Hershey's
yeah,
milk
I mean,
chocolate bar.
I am one of those disgusting American pigs that I'm not... Like, I don't eat tons of it, but
sure.
I love the taste of a classic fucking straight up Hershey's milk.
I am telling
bar.
You.
I'll do it on a s'more. That's like
I fucking love just eating a goddamn Hershey bar.
But they've degraded the quality so much by like all these fucking byproducts and shit, dude. They really have.
Tastes good to me.
You're barely eating chocolate at this point, is what I'm saying.
I don't need to eat chocolate. I need to eat a Hershey bar, Scotty.
Yeah.
A Hershey okay. bar is its own unique thing.
It okay. is. We
and
learned that today.
Who's to define what chocolate truly is? You know what? Will I make a case for a Hershey bar being top grade premium chocolate? Obviously, I won't.
No.
Will I make a case for it being fucking delicious? See, yes, I will.
See, that's the thing is like a lot of snobs put their nose in the air when you talk about things like this.
Snob.
This
I don't
is
give
not,
a shit, dude.
Like Hershey's. Is candy. It's not chocolate. This is, we're talking mass-produced...
Milk, chocolate, right there
American
on
experience
the label.
Chocolate. This is like the chocolate that your mom had in the pantry that she made hot cocoa with, that she made s'mores with, that she gave you on your birthday.
Oh, so now it's the big nostalgia kick.
You got on Christmas. Dude, on Easter, the Easter bunny always left a big old Hershey bar in your basket that was always part of your fucking shit.
Dude, I like buying them giant Hershey bars over at like Cracker Barrel.
I've never gotten
out.
One of those.
Oh, I get them all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
I've gotten
That's the only reason he
one.
Goes there, Paul. Like you have to
No, it's not.
You
I like the hash brown thinking. Casserole, too.
Okay, yeah. TJ, I know how your thinking works, dude. It's backwards. Like, most people are like, I'm hungry. I want to go there. Cheetah's like, I'll go there so I can get a milkshake afterwards.
Dude, Ashley's the same way for different reasons. She loves going to Cracker Barrel. She'll go like, oh, you want to eat there? She lures me with the eat.
Oh,
fool. Oh, she browses the whole
and
store.
And then afterwards, she's like, I've got to go to the bathroom. And she disappears to the bathroom. And instead of coming straight back to where I'm at, she takes the long route through the gift shop.
Yep, dude.
I love
born
it, dude.
Every minute, dude.
It's like, oh, man.
Number three. Snickers. Yeah. Now, I'm not a huge Snickers fan, but I can
I'm
definitely I can, you know, I think Snickers does have the right advertising campaign, because as far as like filling you up, a Snickers is better than most fucking candy bars.
I
like
agree.
If you're looking for something to just put some a little bit of weight in your belly because it feels too empty, I think a Snickers is a pretty good fucking choice in that regard.
Well, you guys have said your favorite has scrolled by, right? Yours is the Three Musketeer.
Well, I love the Three Musketeers. I love the Hershey bar. I don't know if I have a favorite, honestly.
If I had to pick a favorite candy bar, and this might be controversial, it sounds like it's going to be amongst the two of you. This is mine.
Really?
A standard fucking Snickers bar, there's something super pleasing about it to me. It's got the chocolate. I like nougat.
Yeah. It's got nougat. It's got a layer caramel, of it's
nougat,
got nuts,
but not too
got...
much nougat. See, I feel like Mars is all nougat. Yeah. Or not Mars.
Three Musketeers.
Three Musketeer is all nougat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like a little bit of nougat. It's got that.
With
I feel like the Snickers is like a combination of all the popular candy bars into one candy bar.
It does throw the kitchen sink at you. And you know what? It's not my favorite, but I could certainly respect it as a choice. Now, if you say that it's like, I like Mounds bars or something.
What if it's like Halloween? Yeah. If I, you know, I'm like, ooh, there's a bunch of little candies and you grab some and it's like, you look at it, it's like Milky Way. Yeah. But then you see the Snickers. I'm always kind of like, yeah, it's a Snickers. So,
let me tell you how I know Snickers is my favorite, because I don't eat a ton of them.
Right.
You know, I don't eat a ton of candy.
I don't
at all.
Buy candy bars. Unless it's,
in fact,
really,
my favorite, like, I buy candy on, when
I mean,
it comes
to. It's pretty rare even for me to buy a candy bar at this point in my life.
Skittles. Like, Skittles are my
Skittles.
But like, as a bar, if I'm out driving somewhere, if I'm on a long road trip and I go into a gas station and I'm looking at the candy station and I want something that's like familiar and hearty or whatever, I'm always going to grab a Snickers. Like, I don't even consider any of those other bars. I just get a standard size Snickers. And they're right. Like, that's why that ad campaign works. Snickers satisfies, dude.
I have to agree.
It does, dude.
I think it's apropos.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know what? When I said I didn't have a favorite, I was wrong. This is my favorite.
You like the peanut butter cups?
I love fucking Reese's peanut butter cups, even though I apparently can't fucking pronounce the goddamn thing.
Yeah.
But
I enjoy them as well.
I can't pronounce it, but I fucking love it. So apparently the inventor, Harry Burnett Reese, was a former dairy employee of Milton S. Hershey who decided to strike out on his own and make a living in the candy business. And it's kind of ironic because Hershey has reacquired it since.
Sure.
But, goddamn, I love these things. I just love that peanut butter in them because it doesn't taste like any other peanut butter anywhere else in the fucking world that I've ever had.
Dude, it's like ambrosia, dude.
I don't know.
You take a bite into one of these motherfuckers and it's so good.
It's not even like, the peanut butter isn't even like necessarily creamy. It's almost like grainy, which sounds kind of gross, but it doesn't feel that way when you're eating it.
Let me ask you a question. I'm a pretty pretentious person, right?
Yes.
Okay, dude. Even they make like premium, like Reese's, like ripoffs, dude. But even if you ask me...
Doesn't hold a candle. Fuck
I would
that.
Rather have this.
No. I've tried the so-called premium
Reese's. That's what I'm
saying.
Like, it's that good, or I don't even want the higher
Their range. Shit doesn't even... It's not even ballpark.
Mm-mm.
It's not even ballpark. And you know it's not even close when Scotty's pretentious ass is not like, actually, the Cliven's peanut delectables is better. You know, like, bullshit. No, it's not.
I didn't even say that, though. In this
You're
case,
a piece of shit, Scotty!
I agree with you for once.
Yeah, but the hypothetical Scotty that doesn't is pissing me off.
Okay. Well, hold Fair on. Enough. Before you go on to the next one, All I right. have one more criticism of the Reese's. I feel...
You're a monster.
I feel that the Kit Kat criticism applies here. If you get a Reese's...
It was actually your Twix criticism.
Well, that too. You're right. The Twix criticism.
Right. But they have...
You are getting less candy bar if you grab a two-pack of Reese's than you are if you grab any other candy bar.
I don't know.
Fight me.
You're getting maybe not any other candy bar, but you know what?
I'm going to go weigh it,
But you
dude.
Can get...
Let's weigh it.
You can get a four-pack.
How about we weigh it?
Wait a minute, though. You can get a four-pack of the things. You can get a big fucking
bag of
little ones.
Yeah, I'm talking about the standard offering, though.
Okay.
We're talking about the you know what?
I will admit, it is scant.
It is.
Do we know that for sure, though?
Look,
do we know that for sure?
I mean, look, I'm fat enough to know that he's right, Scott.
That package is deceptive.
It's not much, but you know what?
Let's find out.
Quality over quantity, dude.
You know what we're
going
to have to do?
But if you're, you know, look, if you're right, I'm fine saying it.
If we're going
to
weigh it, though.
I want proof.
If we're going to weigh it, here's what we're going to have to do, though, Scotty, for it to be fair. We're going to have to take the two Reese's out.
I agree.
Of the packaging and that's take the Snickers bar. No, we have to just out of the packaging.
We have to weigh the fucking raw.
That's
candy
fine. We can
with
do both
because
the
a lot of the weight for the Reese's comes from that supporting piece of cardboard that is underneath them to keep them all from smooshing together.
An individual Reese's cup. I mean, like it's kind of a pointless thing. First of all, my food skill doesn't work, and second of all,
I don't give a shit. I'm doing it, TJ. All
right. Well, you guys can go figure that out.
That's
but
fine.
I can tell you right now you're going to fucking be disappointed because a Reese's, two Reese's together is not as much as a fucking Snickers.
Maybe
Snickers
you're wrong,
is heavier.
TJ. How do you know? How the fuck do you know? I want to scientifically determine it, TJ.
All right, well, you go ahead. I'm pretty fucking sure.
Let's see if I can find out my fucking phone. What's the
number one
weight?
Best-selling candy in America, M&M's, 406.7 million generated revenue. 417 million units produced, probably in 2014. And you got to figure each one of those units contains a shit ton of M&Ms itself. So we're talking billions of M&Ms every year.
Billions.
Yes. Been around forever. We already kind of explored it ad nauseum. And that's why I gave it so much attention is because it is the most popular candy in America. Continues to be. Not only is it a popular candy, but it has a popular marketing scheme.
Sure. Hey, TJ.
Like those.
What? I don't mean to interrupt you.
What's up?
But I just looked online, and apparently the most recent weight of one Snickers bar is 1.65 ounces.
Uh-huh.
And with Reese's, they weigh individually 1.5 ounces. So actually, the person with the Reese's is getting more.
Okay. Well,
what? I don't believe it.
Okay.
There's no way a
sorry,
one
Paul.
Reese's peanut butter
sorry,
cup
Paul,
weighs
drop some
more
knowledge
than a whole
on you.
Snickers bar.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
I don't buy it. I don't buy reality.
Well, look, hey, go get a scale. And
oh, now you want a fucking scale. Now I told
no,
you.
No, I mean, well,
shit,
now
I'm
that
doing
you.
Independent research.
That's fine. I fucking win, dude. I want $1,000 for Paul and TJ Bolt.
I'm going
now.
Independently.
All right, so
all right, go ahead.
Here's a list, and while you guys are bickering over that meaningless bullshit, here's a list of 20 discontinued candies.
Dude, I want that shit. That looks cool. As
this
fuck.
Is called Space Dust.
Dude, I know.
Sizzling candy.
As
which,
a stoner, I immediately want that.
It looks like a goddamn drug.
Did you snort it, dude?
Yeah, like, can you snort this shit?
Maybe that's why. Oh, if you
Space
could do that.
Dust?
So, I remember these.
Wasn't that a choking hazard?
I guess so. Yeah. Wonder Ball.
Because some dumbass kid ate the prize in it.
Okay, you know what? Stupid if some stupid fuck. Ass kid eats a prize and dies, fuck that stupid kid, all right? Don't ban the Wonder Ball just because one
fucking
kid
Wonder
is
Ball
a retard.
Back. Those were fucking cool, dude.
Cookies and cream bars.
Oh, that's.
I remember these.
That's like a shame, dude.
They were actually pretty fucking good. It was like sort of like a Twix thing. I guess it was a Twix thing.
It was Twix, yeah.
And just didn't catch on, I guess. Hershey's S'mores.
Nah, dude, you can't fucking capture that lightning in a bottle.
You know, Hershey, people already use your chocolate to make fucking actual
s'mores.
You're
just being greedy.
No one wants or needs this weird shit. Okay?
S'mores.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I remember these.
The Alpine White Bar from
Nestle. The Alpine White Bars. They just tasted like a Nestle bar, but they were colored different kind of.
Confusingly, Nestle chose to market this bar as a more sophisticated adult chocolate bar, and it apparently didn't work. PB Max. Never even heard of this.
I remember PB Max.
I had some.
You guys remember this?
It's a peanut butter and jelly bar.
Oh, okay.
PB&J, dude.
Was taken away from us reportedly because the company's owners didn't like the taste of peanut butter. Well, who gives a fuck what they?
Yeah,
what seriously. A stupid reason to discontinue a product.
I don't care for peanut butter.
You know, I'm going to close my towel business because I like to drip dry. Like, what?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. What do your preferences have to do with anything? Hershey's
the Bar
Beastie? None. Oh, it was called Bar None. I get it. Couldn't survive a recipe change. So I guess
the
it was...
Chocolate Beastie, dude? Damn.
Tame the Chocolate Beastie.
That sounds like a euphemism for taking a shit.
Yeah.
I gotta go tame the Chocolate Beastie.
I was thinking about sucking a black dick, but yeah.
Well,
taking a shit
where
works,
our minds
too.
Go in different directions, I guess.
They're both fucking scatological juvenile directions,
yeah,
so...
That's true.
I guess yours more scatological.
I remember Summits.
I don't remember
these
at all.
I've never even heard of this. Two cookie bars. Kind of doing the same Twix thing where you need two bars. Were they any good? You remember?
No, I don't. I remember them being around when I was real young.
I'm sure this is not even a great product, but I want this fucking space dust, dude.
I bet it's just like, what's that shit now? The pixie sticks and shit?
Kind of, yeah.
I bet it's just that shit.
It was similar to Pop Rocks.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, it's Pop Rocks.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's basically Pop Rocks. They said it couldn't overcome an unfortunate name choice. I'm sorry, Space Dust is not an unfortunate name. I want to have this just on the basis of it being called Space Dust and having a UFO.
Scroll down a little bit. Parents complained the name was too similar to Angel Dust, a drug.
Oh, my God. Suck a fucking dick, parents.
The creator of Space Dust even took out a full-page ad to reassure parents, but Space Dust was eventually discontinued.
Man, fuck America.
The fucking outrage. Oh, remember, PC whiny culture is new.
No. Nope.
Space Dust sounds just too similar.
But you know what? PC whiny culture is kind of new because it used to be pearl clutching conservatives that were like this. And now it's just.
It's liberals.
It's pearl clutching liberals and conservatives whining about shit. So really, like, the moms and shit, the concerned mothers against Space Dust.
The outrage
they
mob.
They won.
The outrage mob was.
Oh, it ain't nothing
there.
New. It
that's
ain't nothing
saying.
New.
Yeah. That's really more what
Let
I
me
was
ask you guys a deeply personal question while we're on the subject of Pop Rocks.
Mm-hmm.
You ever gotten a Pop Rock blowjob before, dude?
No.
It's something a man
I'm
going
to go
experience.
Back up to the Space Dust because you're talking about.
It's, oh, it's shit, something dude. A man should experience. I'm telling you, I got a Pop Rock blowjob one time.
When?
It was actually the first chick I ever slept with, Gabe.
Whoa,
me.
Dude.
She was well versed in the arts of cock and balls. Let's just say she had a PhD.
She had a long resume.
Yes. And she brought
Even
over some
Pop
Rocks one
one
time, and she was like, "Hey, I'm going to try something. You just close your eyes and tell me what you think about this." And I didn't know what she was doing. She put in the Pop Rocks and started going to town. It's not something I would want all the time. You should experience, though. It's interesting.
I'm going to look this up and make sure there isn't some kind of trick going
on.
Dude.
There isn't. What? Like Pop Rocks getting in your pee hole?
I don't know.
Your dick's going to be burning, dude.
Berries and cream starbursts. Apparently those are not a thing.
I hated those.
I'm a little lad that loves berries and cream.
I don't remember them.
You don't remember do you remember that commercial?
I do.
Yep.
I mean, I don't actually remember it. I actually only saw it like in the last couple years and I was kind of like.
It's hideous.
So here's another one that was outlawed.
Choking hazard.
Yep. Kinder surprise. Same concept as the Wonder Ball.
Yeah.
There's a prize inside.
They sell them in the U.S. now, but it's not like this. It's like everything's separated.
Kids eat them, and then they die.
The toy's like
then,
separate.
You know.
It's stupid.
So it's bad, I guess. I don't know. Bonkers fruit candy. I remember the commercials for this, or at least I've seen them before. I don't think I've ever actually eaten a Bonkers fruit candy.
I've had a Bonkers. I like fruit candy, so I've had a Bonkers. I don't remember them being all too good.
Lifesavers holes.
Yes.
I remember these.
A brilliant marketing campaign. I don't know why they went away.
Let's see. Lifesavers holes were introduced in the 90s and were basically lifesavers, but in non-ring form. Lifesavers holes were plagued with problems. After being on the market for the second half of 1990, they were recalled for being choking hazards. Oh, my God. We're such pussies in this country.
Yeah, well, like, you should not be giving this to a child that's too, like, small to choke, you know what I mean? That they would choke on something anyway.
Yeah. There's a reason that my mom, when I was a kid, like, when I was a little kid, did not give me hard candy. She's like, no, it's a choking hazard. That's a parent's responsibility. Right. It's not a company's responsibility to not offer a hard candy product.
And if you look at the packaging of this shit and the time it came out, this was aimed squarely at teenagers, dude. This was for, like, teenagers, put in your pocket, skate around all day. You got Lifesavers holes. Pop it open. You got Lifesavers, man. Like, that's not it's not for little kids.
Wonka donuts. Don't remember those.
I don't remember these at all.
Never had them.
The only thing Wonka donuts had in common with actual donuts were their shape. The Wonka version was a donut-shaped chocolate ring with a truffle-like interior. It sounds pretty uninspired. Butterfinger BBs. I remember those.
Oh,
yes.
Dude, fuck yeah.
I remember Butterfinger BBs. I thought you could still get
these. No, Butterfinger BBs are defunct. Butterfingers are still around.
Yeah.
But Butterfinger BBs are dead and gone. You know, Butterfingers, I like Butterfinger, but... God damn, is that a fucking difficult candy to eat because your teeth are just like stuck together. And now that I have so many fillings and shit,
you're just worried about.
I'm scared of fucking eating that shit. I'm just like, I'm gonna lose a filling if I try to eat a fucking Butterfinger.
This is probably my second. Like, we haven't covered it yet. My second favorite candy bar would probably be a Butterfinger.
Yeah.
And for the same reason that you don't like them is why I don't eat them all that often, because they are a chore to eat. My mom puts them in the freezer. They're her favorite shit.
Does that make them like more brittle so that they don't stick as much? Or
well, kind of, but when you chew them up, you still got the same problem, obviously. Right. But yeah, it does give them a different texture.
They're so fucking
to eat.
Sticky. I love this the Simpsons ads for all the Butterfingers products and shit,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, they were great.
Nobody better lay a finger on my Butterfinger, you know? So that was cool. And I liked the Butterfinger BBs back when I had...
Oh, this is an unfortunate name, dude.
Yeah, I remember these.
Garbage Can D. I think this whole trend of, like, it's gross sort of thing is not really as popular as it once was.
Not only that, but this was a dual problem trend, because this was, like... It was like, I think you squirt it into your mouth. I think it was like a liquidy candy.
Oh, man.
That you just like squirted. Am I right about that?
I have no idea. This is from
so it was hard candies.
It's
yeah,
from the
just
same company that made Garbage Pail Kids. They also sold Garbage Candy. They were really trying to push the whole garbage brand at that time.
That may be why I remember these then, because I was big into Garbage Pail Kids as a kid.
Yeah, and there was apparently a Max Headroom candy, which, why would that still be around?
Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious why that's not there
Max
anymore.
Max Headroom was a meme that died on arrival. I don't even remember why people
DOA,
were into him.
Yeah, that's kind of just like, you know, that's just a fucking novelty thing at best.
This is another article, so that's over. So I don't know why they even mentioned that the Max Headroom candy isn't being made anymore.
Maybe it was delicious.
Maybe it was.
And nutritious.
Well, no, probably not.
Definitely not.
So I just want to like close this episode out with just a few random candy facts that I just didn't work into the fucking main thing.
Fair enough.
So fact number one, the man who invented cotton candy, William James Morrison, was a dentist.
Wow.
And I also read...
Damn, he's trying to get himself some business, dude.
Yeah, I know. Like a clever marketing scheme. I also read that it was originally called fairy floss.
I've heard that.
But
they actually sell it as that at Ren Fairs sometimes. You'll see them selling cotton candy machines and they'll call it fairy floss.
Well, it's not from the Renaissance. It's from,
I know.
You know,
but that's where I've heard it called that before.
Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, he was trying to drum up some business for himself, probably. Three Musketeers candy bars got their name because each bar originally came as three pieces, each with a different flavor, vanilla, strawberry, and chocolate. Chocolate is the one that's still in existence today.
What?
Yeah.
I thought they brought back some different flavors, though.
They used to be, it used to be called Three Musketeers because there was actually three different flavors in every pack.
Well, I mean, like, I thought they actually, like, brought back, like, a strawberry, like a full bar, though.
Maybe. I don't know. I never heard of that.
A strawberry Three Musketeers?
Yeah, I'm kind of confused as to whether the exterior was chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry, or whether it's the filling that's chocolate,
filling,
and strawberry.
Who knows?
But I thought that was weird.
One can only speculate.
I had no idea.
Know?
I'm glad that that's not the case anymore, because whatever. I like them the way they are. Although Americans eat a lot of candy, we don't hold a candle to Germans, who consume twice as much as we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, do
you? Why aren't they as fat, though?
I think they're pretty close, dude.
I actually don't think... I think Germany's obesity rates are, you know, they're up there. But, I mean, you know, the Holocausting burns a lot of calories.
I want to eat some chocolate. Yeah, some dark, rich chocolate.
Another connection between war and candy. Another candy that kind of got its big introduction onto the scene in World War II was Tootsie Rolls.
Ooh.
Fuck yeah, dude.
They were actually part of soldiers' rations because they just held up so well.
Yeah, that's true. A Tootsie Roll will keep for a while.
Right. You could find an old Tootsie Roll in your couch cushions. It's been there since like 1987, and you still eat that shit. It's still a Tootsie Roll.
Yeah,
so, Fun fact about Tootsie Rolls.
They do. I like their fruity Tootsie Rolls.
A urine-soaked Tootsie Roll in a gutter.
Unwrap it. It's still going to be a Tootsie Roll in
still
there.
Still a Tootsie Roll.
Yeah.
That's actually the first wrapped candy, I believe, too, was a Tootsie Roll.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's interesting. More than half of all children prefer chocolate treats in their trick-or-treat buckets.
Wow.
And I think when we look at the top candies, it's kind of borne out that chocolate is king here in America.
Right.
Even if most countries consider our chocolate shit compared to their fancy European chocolate.
Whatever.
Fuck them.
Fuck them, yeah.
Hershey's is the one true chocolate.
Fuck them
your
for liking quality
shit.
Things.
Oh, I don't like it because it's sour.
Quality.
You know what's sour? You for being beaten at the chocolate game by an American. So fuck you.
Amen. So, last fact.
Like only the cost of quality.
Shut up, Scotty. Fucking European
Scotty,
snob.
You fucking European sympathizer. Anti-American
I love
bigot.
They're fucking chocolate, dude.
Love it or leave it, Scotty.
Final fact, y'all. Final fact, and then we're wrapping this episode up. Despite the close association between candy and Halloween, Christmas is actually the biggest candy sales season of the year.
Yet again, fucking Christmas to the
and
rest.
You know what? When I look back, when I first heard that statistic or that fact, I was like,
dude, everyone gives
I'm kind of skeptical. But honestly, when I look back at my Christmas and my Halloween, I ask myself which season I, as an adult, ended up eating way more candy in. It was fucking Christmas, easily.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Candy on Halloween only comes from like one source, or like you buy some for the house and you give it to a few trick-or-treaters and there's a ton left over and you're just stuck with it.
Horrible.
Or whatever. But on Christmas, like it seems like candy just came at me from every fucking angle. Like everywhere I went, candy was just fucking flying out of the sky into my fucking lap, dude.
Yeah, everybody gives candy. Everybody
it's a stocking stuffer. People got candy dishes out in their fucking houses and shit.
People make candy type things. Mm-hmm. Ashley made that big old pan of fucking bread pudding and shit, which is basically candy.
Candies and sweets and all kinds of gluttony comes out in December because in January, everyone's going on a fucking diet to try to lose weight, which I'm on now.
It's the eternal cycle of failure.
Yeah.
It's
you
like
know,
the end of the year.
The
we
beginning
all go,
of the year is all about this year is going to be different, and the ending of the year is always about
eat
fucking gluttonous bullshit.
Next year's going to be different.
See, Paul's foregone that, dude. I don't think I've, are you on a diet or anything?
Not yet. I'm
you're working
I just haven't
it.
Said yeah. I'm gonna try and lose a little bit of weight because I do need to regulate a little bit. I don't want to turn into a fucking dude. You guys have to have a special chair to get me around then and shit. You know,
You already have a special chair.
Gotta install ramps to get for Paul to get in the house. You know,
what do you mean I already have a special chair? I mean, fuck you, TJ.
Didn't we have
a big and tall?
It's
chair,
a big and tall
you?
Chair.
Yeah, I do. It's a fat guy chair.
Right. So that's a special chair.
I mean, like a power chair. I'm already at the fat guy chair.
Yeah, I don't feel like putting in ramps, Paul. So
yeah, exactly.
You have to lose a little bit of weight, dude.
All right, well, that's our episode on candy in America. Honestly, there's more we could do on it. I don't know. Let us know below whether you want to know more about the history of candy or some other junk foods or
a delightfully sweet episode.
Yes, delightfully sweet.
I just love candy and popcorn. Pop, 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 pop. I'm so terrifying.
Should get Scotty to play Pennywise.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, dude.
He'd be
all
rich.
This time we were arguing about who's Pennywise, and it's clearly Scotty.
Dude, can you imagine Scotty appearing out of the gutter?
Hiya, Polly.
It's like, oh shit!
Would you like some candy?
Pop, Paul.
All right, yeah. Fire Bill Skarsgård. That's your fucking Pennywise right there.
We've got pizza and weed.
Oh, Paul, we have a bong with your name on it. Come down below, Paul. Take a hit.
Shit. Oh, it's already tempting. I'm wanting to go in that sewer. All right. Thank you guys for watching.
Later.
See you next time.